Okay, this is Brian Tracy. This is our call today. It's called The Art of Closing the Sale. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a whole series of wonderful ideas that will help you to close more sales faster. Two quick stories before we begin. When I was a young man, I was out selling. I was going from door to door, office to office, working my heart out. And when it came to the close, I would paralyze. And I would reach the point where the prospect would say, well, leave it with me. Let me think it over. Let me look at it. Let me get back to you. You get back to me. And I'd say, okay, good. And I'd go to the next place. And they say, well, let me think it over. Get back to you. And I go to the next place. By the time I had finished calling on doors, and I used to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and knock on doors till 9 o'clock at night, I had the whole town thinking about my offer. I mean, I had everybody up and down the streets thinking about my offer, but no sales. And then I realized that my problem was that I didn't know how to ask for the order. I'd never been trained. Most people have never been trained. I had no idea at all. I was getting up every morning. I was starting to read sales books, and I was starting to learn. And I finally realized that it was my failure to ask intelligently for the order. So I changed my strategy. I resolved that this was the day I was not going to take any more put-offs. So I made my presentation, and the fellow said, well, leave it with me. Why don't you get back to me? And I said, I'm sorry. I took a deep breath. I said, I don't make callbacks. He looked at me. His head snapped up. He said, what? I said, I don't make callbacks. I said, Mr. Prospect, you know everything you need to know to make a decision right now. Why don't you just take it? He said, well, if you don't make callbacks, then I'll just take it. And he did. He gave me a check. And I walked out of there. I couldn't believe it. I went to the next place, cold calling. And at the end of it, he said, it looks pretty good to me. Why don't you get back to me? I said, I'm sorry, sir. I don't make callbacks. He said, don't make callbacks? I said, no. I said, you know everything you need to know now to make a decision. It seems like a good choice for you. Why don't you just take it? He said, well, if you don't make callbacks, I'll just take it. I went into the next place to do the same thing. I made 3 sales in 45 minutes. Previously, I was making maybe 3 sales in a week. I was just shattered. I just realized it was my ability to ask for the order that made all the difference. Now, one more quick story. I gave my seminar in San Diego, and part of my live seminar for half a day is on closing techniques, and I sold a program that includes some of the closing techniques that we're talking about today. I didn't realize who it was, but 6 months later, a fellow comes up to me at another seminar in Oxnard, which is about 170 miles north of San Diego, about 2.5-hour drive. And he said, hi, you remember me? I said, no. He said, well, I was in your seminar 6 months ago in San Diego. I said, well, that's great. I mean, and you're back again? I mean, that's quite a long drive. He said, yeah. He said, I got that program on closing sales. He said, at that time, because we have to keep good records, I was making 1 sale out of 10 people I spoke to. He said, now I'm making 5 out of 10 sales. I said, that's incredible. He said, my income's up 40-50%. I've never made so much money in my whole life. He said, just by using those closing techniques. I said, well, why are you here? He said, because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. I said, well, great. Anyway, the seminar goes on, and I speak to him again during that break, and he goes on. About 6 months later, I'm doing another seminar in Riverside, California, which is, again, about 2 hours inland from San Diego. It's like a triangle of 3 cities. And I'm telling this story about this fellow who came up to me and said that he's now closing 5 out of 10 sales. And he stood up. He said, that was me. His name was Keith. I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, I'm back for more. I said, is the story that I just told the audience, is that correct? He said, well, not quite. He said, I'm now closing 9 out of 10 sales with your closing techniques. And around the office, they call me the closing machine. He said, I've never made so much money in my whole life since I learned how to ask for the order. Nothing has changed. The market hasn't changed. The product hasn't changed. The company hasn't changed. The competition hasn't changed. The price hasn't changed. Just my ability to ask for the order. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about things that you can do to double and triple your order, your sales, and we know this works. We're going to teach you a series of sales closing techniques because different products, different services, different times, and sometimes different customers require different ways of asking for the order. And before we begin, let's talk about the fact that the more closing techniques you know, the more likely it is that you close the sale in the course of the selling interview. Remember, selling is a skill. Good salespeople are made, not born. Some of the most successful salespeople in America were at one time shy and insecure and clumsy at selling. And some people say, well, I'm not very good at selling. Well, get over it. The fact of the matter is, selling is a learnable skill. You can learn any skill that you need to learn to achieve any goal that you can set for yourself. Now, here's the great thing, is that I've learned this with working with more than 1 million salespeople. Once you feel really, really good about asking for the order, you become far more aggressive about prospecting. You're far more confident in presenting. You're far more active because you know that the end of the sales process will be a success rather than a defeat. So the more effective you become at closing the sale, the more motivated you become to call on more people in the first place. And that's why people increase their income by 2 or 3 and 4 and 5 and 10 times. They can hardly wait to call on people because they feel so confident that if they call on the right person at the right time, they know how to get the order. And that's what's going to happen to you. Now, you've all heard of Murphy's Laws, of all the things that could go wrong, the very first thing will go wrong at the very worst time. Well, one of Murphy's Laws is that before you do anything, you have to do something else first. So before you close the sale, you have to do several other things first. And here are the two psychological, what we call antecedents to closing. These are things that you have to cover before you close the sale. And the first, number one, is enthusiasm. 51% of all closing effectiveness comes from your enthusiasm. Now, this means your excitement, or what we call your commitment, your belief in your product or service. One of the very best definitions I've ever heard of closing is that closing is a transfer of enthusiasm. In other words, when the commitment and belief that you have in the goodness and value of your product transfers like an electrical arc into the mind and heart of the customer, the sale takes place. Remember, emotions are contagious. When you really believe in your product or service, when you're really positive about it, your customer picks it up. University of Chicago study concluded recently that your belief in the goodness of your product is the most effective single element of the sales conversation. So it's really important that you believe in what you sell. It's really important that you know what you sell. It's very important that you love what you sell. It's important that you use what you sell. It's important that you would sell your product or service to your mother or father or brother or sister or best friend if they could use it. I've met many people, by the way, who try to sell products and services they wouldn't use themselves because they don't believe in them. They don't really think they're that good. They had a big kerfuffle in Detroit when they were complaining about Japanese car imports, and they had a big demonstration. And all the automobile workers, thousands of them, came to the demonstration to demonstrate against the imported Japanese cars. One-third of the auto workers were driving Japanese cars. They wouldn't even buy the cars that they made during the day because they knew how they were being made. So think about that. Well, when you have this deep belief in the goodness of what you're selling, you'll reach the level of enthusiasm that has to be transferred into the mind of the prospect. And by the way, I don't mean jumping up and down or going rah, rah, and so on and so forth. The most powerful emotion is what is called constrained enthusiasm. It's like the power of boiling water in a kettle. It's when you are filled with this confident, powerful belief that your product or service is really good. And you don't even have to say very much. It just sort of emanates from you. It radiates from you like sunshine. That there's something about you and your product that causes the other person to want to possess it. Now, the second psychological quality, first is belief, enthusiasm, commitment, and so on. The second is positive expectations, confident expectations. Is the very best salespeople confidently expect their customers to buy? As a matter of fact, it's completely illogical to them that a customer would not buy. They feel that they're giving the customer $10 bills in exchange for $5 bills. They're giving the customer so much value in exchange for the price that the customer would be a fool not to buy. So when you have confident expectations, you ask expectantly, would you like the red one or the green one today? You don't say, what would you like to do? Are you going to take one? Or is this what you had in mind? You just confidently expect they will buy. Now, confidence, we know, comes from knowledge. It comes from practice. It comes from experience. It comes from believing that your product or service can do what you say it will do. Confidence shows when you confidently expect the person to buy. Now, the next thing you have to do before you do something else is you have to qualify the prospect. So you have to make sure that this person that you're talking to is a genuine prospect. Remember, we say the first step in sales is to separate prospects from suspects. If you have 10 people out there, only one or two of the 10, even if they have the money and all look the same on the outside, only one or two of the 10 is a genuine prospect. So what we find is that a genuine prospect has four qualifications. Number one, the prospect needs what you're selling. They have a genuine need for it. There is something in their life that is not being satisfied that your product or service can help them with. Second of all, the prospect can use what you're selling. Even if it's a fabulous high-tech product, if the person is not a high-tech person, they can't use it. And there are people in every single company that are set up to actually assess whether or not the product will be used within their company based on the way the company is organized. The third qualification is the person that must be able to afford the product. Can they genuinely put out the money for the product? It's amazing how many people want it. They need it, they can use it, but they can't afford it. And the fourth qualification is, does the person want the product? And here's what we have found, is that until the prospect actually manifests a desire, makes it clear that they want what you're selling, there's something about it that's desirable to them, if you ask a closing question, you'll kill the sale. We say selling out of sequence kills the sale. If you sell before it's clear to the customer that the customer wants it, you'll actually kill the sale. It's almost like startling a deer. You'll cause the person to back off and go into trauma and say, well, leave it with me, let me think it over, and so on. So it's really important that you present your product or service in such a way that the customer desires it. Remember, we say buying desire comes before the sale. And much of the sale is made in the presentation. In some products, especially in real estate, the close is largely determined by how well you present the product to the prospect. Now, why is the close difficult? Well, the close is difficult for a variety of reasons. The moment of closing is always a moment of tension. There's always a feeling of stress on the part of the prospect, which is what we call a form of buyer's remorse in advance. Whenever a prospect reaches a point where he has to make an important buying decision, whenever he has to spend money, tension wells up inside of him. He experiences the fear of failure. Sometimes I'll ask my audiences, I'll say, has anybody here ever made a buying mistake? And everybody will raise their hand. I said, of course. Every single person who's ever bought anything has made a buying mistake. You bought something and later on you found out you paid too much or you got the wrong product or it didn't work or they wouldn't repair it or they wouldn't get back to you and you were furious because you'd made a buying mistake. And every single time a customer makes a buying mistake, what they do is they resolve, by gum, this will never happen to me again. And then you walk in, you're a professional, you're nice, you're pleasant, you've got a beautiful product or service at a good price, but the prospect reacts with the same negativity that they reacted to being burnt in the past. You know, there's a little known fact about zoology and cats. If a cat sits on a hot stove and jumps, the cat will never again sit on a hot stove. But the cat will never sit on a cold stove either. And prospects are very much the same. Is if they've been burnt in the past by a poor product, a poor salesperson, a poor company, you walk in and you're a first-class person, they will react exactly as if you were a hot stove. So just expect this. Is that everybody has a fear of making a mistake, a fear of buying the wrong thing, a fear of paying too much, or a fear of being criticized by other people for making a buying mistake. And when a person has this fear, it's very much like having a spear right in the stomach. And what would you do if somebody pushed a spear in your stomach? You'd back away. And that's what they do. They back away and they say, well, let me think it over, or let me talk over to someone else, or can you leave me some material, or could you call me back next week? I have to check it out, or I can't afford it right now. They give you a whole series of knee-jerk reasons not to buy because they're afraid of making a mistake. And we'll talk about how you could neutralize that. Now, the second major stumbling block to the close is the fear of rejection. And this is experienced by the salesperson. It's the number one reason why salespeople are afraid to sell. They're afraid to hear the word no. And by the way, if you're having troubles with the word no, you've picked the wrong field to work in, because 4 out of 5, 9 out of 10, people will say no to you. And when I started off selling, I used to be so terrified of cold calling, I would just almost wet my pants. I was so scared of cold calling, so afraid of hearing the word no. And then I asked the top person, I said, well, how do you deal with it, fear of rejection? He said, it's very simple. He said, just realize that rejection is not personal. I said, well, how do you mean? He said, the person is not rejecting you. They're just rejecting a commercial offer in a competitive society. It has nothing to do with you. If they say no to you, it has nothing to do with you or your product or your service or your company. It doesn't mean that you or your product or service are no good. It just means for a variety of reasons, most of which you have no control over, the person does not want it, does not need it, can't use it, can't afford it at the moment. That's all. So when they say no, you always say, well, thank you very much. You have a great day. Get on to the next person. You know, the old saying, some will, some won't. So what? Next. And so whenever somebody says no to you, you just smile, say thank you for your time, and say to yourself, some will, some won't, so what, next, and go on to the next person. Don't let rejection get you down. One of the key factors in successful selling is you must be prepared to hear the word no and continue. Now, sometimes when the prospect says, I don't think so, or I'm not in the market right now, you should just ignore it. You must be able to let it roll off your back like water off a duck's back, because it's not personal. And your job is to face the fear of rejection, confront the fear, do the thing you fear, and ask for the order. Now, here's a good way of thinking. If you ask a person for an appointment, you call them up and want to speak to them, or you talk to them about your product or service, and they are negative and they reject you. Remember, a few seconds before, they were not customers of yours. Now a few seconds has passed, and they're still not customers of yours. All you've lost is a few seconds of your time. By the time you get on to the next person, this person will forget that you ever called. And so don't ever, ever allow rejection to hold you back. Now, there's only one way to overcome rejection, and that is to do the thing you fear, is to be willing to face rejection over and over again. I was in Taiwan recently, and I was introduced to one of the top business people in Taiwan, national reputation. He's the Jeff Bezos, you know, the founder of Amazon.com. He is the Jeff Bezos of the Chinese book market, because he was the first person to have an idea of selling books on the Internet, selling Chinese books on the Internet. But the Chinese book publishing and distribution system is such that publishers distribute exclusively through bookstores. And when he approached publishers, there's about 6,000 of them altogether, when he approached publishers to distribute their books, they all said no, 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 almost like that commercial, no, no, no. They said, no, we won't, no, we don't believe in it, no, it's not a tested idea, no, it won't work here, and so on. He said in the first 7 years, he got 5,000 no's. He said that he had quit after the first 5,000 no's, he'd have never succeeded. By his 10th year, he had 10,000 no's. But by his 11th year, he had virtually every single major publisher in the Chinese publishing industry as his customers. He's now a multimillionaire. He's got 200 staff. He's on the front covers of newspapers and magazines. He's got a beautiful home and everything else. He said to me, I just remember this, he said, if I had quit after the first 5,000 no's, he said, I'd have never succeeded in this business. Now, I pass that on to you because you're going to experience a lot of rejection. And you say, okay, I'm willing to collect 5,000 no's if that's what it takes to be rich and successful. And so every time you get a no, you say, ha, one step closer to being successful. Every time somebody says no, that's a step forward. That's a step in advance. Remember this, there's no such thing as failure in selling. There's only feedback. And when somebody says no, they're just giving you feedback. This is obviously the wrong person. The sooner you stop talking to the wrong person, the sooner you get on to the right person. So always say, well, thank you very much for your time. You have a great day. If you change your mind, please give me a call. So expect sales resistance. Sales resistance is a normal and natural in every sales conversation. At the moment of making a buying decision, this fear and uneasiness, this tension starts to well up both in you and in the customer, and your job is to get through this smoothly and get the close over with as little tension and stress as possible. Remember, closing techniques are not methods to get people to buy things they don't want, don't need, can't use, and can't afford. They are simply techniques to help get prospects past that moment of tension. The professional salesperson takes the person smoothly past the point of closing and makes it easy for the prospect to buy. The unprofessional salesperson is like me when I first started. I'd sit there after giving my enthusiastic down-dump presentation, and I'd just sit there wishing and hoping, and I'd say, well, what do you think? And I just, like laying down your guard in a boxing ring, I just get knocked out. The prospect will say, well, I think I'd like to think it over, or I have to talk it over with someone else, or why don't you leave it with me and get back to me in a while, and so on. And I'd be back out in the street and on to my next call and haven't made a single sale. This is why you have to know how to make ask a closing question. This is how you have to learn how to make sales. By the way, the story of this fellow goes to his dentist, talking about getting through the moment of the close quickly. He calls his dentist. He said, Billy said, I haven't seen you for a few years. He said, but I've got a bad tooth. He's an older guy. I need to have his tooth pulled. And he said, okay, so we can come on in, say, on Tuesday afternoon. He said, well, Bill, he said, how much do you charge to pull a tooth nowadays? And he said, well, Sam, right now it's about $80 a tooth. He said, $80 a tooth? He said, whoa, he said, that's a lot of money. He said, how long does it take? He said, well, Sam, it only takes about a minute. He said, you charge $80 for 1 minute of work? He said, now, Sam, he said, if it's the time that you're concerned with, I can take all the time you like. And it's the same thing with closing techniques. You're not supposed to drag it out. You're just not supposed to take all the time you like. You have to do it quickly, efficiently, and smoothly. And there's only one way to become good at closing, and that is practice. So let's start with the beginning of closing. Remember, if you don't get a chance to speak to people, you don't get a chance to do anything else. So the first closing is closing on appointments. And this is terribly, terribly important. It's aimed at getting appointments on the telephone. If you use a telephone to get appointments, you know how difficult and frustrating it can be. Today you get voicemail, you get put off, you get I'm not interested, you get shuffled into voicemail hell, you get every single problem, but still the very best way to make appointments is to phone people. Maybe you send them an email first and you say I'm going to be calling you between 4 and 5 on such and such a day, and then you call them, and that's the best way to get appointments. So the reason that people don't like telephoning is because they've had so much rejection in the past. Some people avoid the telephone. Some people sound terrible on the telephone. I worked with a salesman for Merrill Lynch. This guy is a legend in the industry. He started off dialing for dollars out of the yellow pages and business lists and so on, and he was very stressed out about the telephone. And he realized, however, that 98-99% of all of his contact with his customers would be by telephone, and he had to get over it. So instead of being fearful about the phone, avoiding the phone like it was wired to explode in your hand, as many salespeople do, he decided that he was going to make the telephone an object of study. So he threw his whole heart into studying the use of the phone, to listening to vocal intonations, to writing out sentences and scripts and practicing them over and over again. Sometimes he'd make 20, 30, 50 calls a day just to practice using the phone. Well, after a few years, he became so good on the phone that people used to stand around his desk to listen to him when he phoned up people. 99% of his business, he never met his customers face-to-face. But by the time he'd been in business for 12 years, he was making more than $5 million a year in straight commission telephone sales. He became so good at using the phone. He could recognize 15, 20 different types of hesitation, different types of no, different coughs, different sounds. Even he could recognize different silences and know what to say as a result. Now, I'm not saying that you can become that kind of an expert, but instead of avoiding making telephone calls, look, see it as a challenge. And the more telephone calls you make, the better you get. So here's what I did is I found that you have to say something when you telephone and you get through to the prospect. You have to say something that breaks preoccupation, grabs attention, and points to the result or benefit of the product. Let me say this over again. In other words, whenever you call somebody, you're interrupting them. They're busy. Their mind is preoccupied on something else. The only thing that breaks preoccupation is if you can connect with a deep emotional need, want, or problem that they have, which your product or service can satisfy. It has to grab people's attention. It has to break them loose from whatever else they're doing. And the way that you do that is your opening words have to point to the result or benefit of what you sell. Now, here's an important point. When I started selling, I made the big mistake. I would start off talking about my product or service. I would immediately get what I call the automatic answer, which was, not interested, slam. Not interested, slam. Don't want it, slam. Don't need it, slam. Not in the market, slam. We have our own slam, and so on. I found that every customer's telephone is hooked up to a don't need it, slam, don't want it, slam, an automatic phone hanger-upper. You may have experienced that in the past. And so I would call up people and I'd say, I'd like to speak to you about sales training, not interested, slam. I could never figure that out. I mean, this is a sales organization. This is a sales manager. These are company owners. But they always said, no, don't need it, don't want it, can't use it, can't afford it, not in the market, and so on. And then I realized that nobody cares what your product is. They only care what your product does to change or improve their lives. So I would rephrase it, and this is what I did. I'd call up and I'd ask the receptionist, I'd say, who is the person who makes the decisions regarding sales training in your company? She would say, well, that would be Mr. Jones. I'd say, thank you. What is his first name, please? Bill Jones. Can I speak to Mr. Jones? And I'd be put through and I'd say, hello, Mr. Jones. This is Brian Tracy. And I always believe in being perfectly straight. I'd say, hello, this is Brian Tracy. I'm with the Institute for Executive Development. And I was just wondering, would you be interested in a method that would enable you to increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 6 to 12 months? Well, if I'm speaking to the right person, I'm speaking to a person whose entire life is determined by the level of sales that he gets through his sales force. So if I ask the right question, it will trigger immediate interest, break preoccupation, identify with the need. And he would say, of course I am. And then he would say, well, what is it? You see, well, if you ask the right question, the prospect will say, what is it? If you talk about your product or service, they'll say, I'm not interested, don't want it, can't use it, can't afford it. So I'd say, Would you be interested in a way of increasing your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 6 to 12 months? The prospect would say, well, of course. What is it? You say, that's exactly why I'm calling. And this is where you go into the close for the appointment. Remember, when you're telephoning to make an appointment, you are telephoning to close on the appointment, to sell an appointment, not to sell your product or service. Confusion over this is a major reason for failure and frustration, because the biggest mistake you make is to start describing your product on the telephone. The prospect will almost immediately be triggered to say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, I can't afford it, don't have the time, and so on. All you were selling is 10 minutes of his time. When the prospect says, what is it? And by the way, if the prospect says anything other than what is it to your opening question or statement, you are either speaking to the wrong person or you have not phrased your opening statement in such a way that it elicits interest and causes the client viscerally, instantly to want to know what it is. So when the prospect says, what is it? You say, that's exactly what I'd like to talk to you about, and I just need about 10 minutes of your time. I'll show you what I've got. I'll show you how this method works, and you can judge for yourself if it's the right thing for you. In other words, the thing is, I need 10 minutes of your time, and you can decide for yourself. I just need 10 minutes of your time, and you be the judge. These are the most powerful words of all because they prove you're not going to put the customer under high pressure. You're not going to arm wrestle them. You're just going to lay out your goods like a merchant in a bazaar and say, here they are. If this is what you're looking for, this is what we've got. So remember this. You're focusing on what it does in 10 minutes. Now, the prospect will often ask, well, can you tell me a little bit about it? You say, I'd love to tell you a little bit about it. But unfortunately, I have something I have to show you. There's something that you have to see to make a proper opinion, to make a proper decision. And I just need about 10 minutes of your time. As soon as you use the words, I have something I have to show you, you shift the emphasis from what is it to curiosity. Now, everybody's curious, just like a kid. I wonder what it is. Sometimes they say, well, what does it cost? You say, Mr. Prospect, the good news is if it's not exactly what you're looking for, there's no charge. And then you just stop. And you say, and all I need is 10 minutes of your time. Keep coming back to 10 minutes of your time. If the prospect says, well, can you send me something in the mail? Here's the rule, is that sales materials are to be left, not sent. Sales materials are to be left, not sent. If you send the sales materials in the mail, I advise people, instead of sending them in the mail, throw them in your own wastebasket and save yourself the postage of sending it to someone else. Because sending me something in the mail just means that I'll never look at it and I'll never take your phone calls again. Remember, everybody you talk to, and the better of customer they are, the busier they are, every customer you talk to is busy. And you're an interruption, and as soon as you hang up, they'll forget that you ever lived, unless you nail down the 10 minutes. Well, if the prospect says, well, why don't you call me next week, and we'll set up a firm date. Remember, this is another put-off, and what you do is you say, Mr. Prospect, I've got my calendar in front of me. Why don't we set a time right now? Sometimes they say, well, I don't know if I'm going to be in town next week. Well, let's set a time right now, and if for some reason you have to be out of town or I have to change, you can call me or I can call you. But you must be polite, you must smile into the telephone, and you must be insistent on nailing down the appointment. If the prospect says, can you send me something in the mail? You say, well, I'd like to send it to you in the mail, but you know how bad the mails are. Could I drop it off to you personally sometime this afternoon or later on this week? Always offer to drop off the materials personally. Now, if the prospect says, yes, you can drop it off personally, and you arrive and the prospect is not there, refuse to leave the material with someone else. Take it away and arrange to come back at another time. Because if you drop it off, they'll say, yes, I've got the material. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. I'll call you when I have a chance, and so on. No. Don't drop off the material unless you put it in the hands of the prospect, or only after you've had a chance to qualify the prospect to make sure that what you're talking about is something that he needs, he can use, he can afford, and something that he wants. Offer see him on Monday or Tuesday, on Wednesday afternoon or Thursday afternoon, early in the afternoon or later on in the afternoon. But your job is to nail down a time. The last thing you do, by the way, remember people move a lot, is double confirm the time, date, and place. I will see you then at 3 o'clock on Wednesday. That's the 24th in your office. Are you still and then read out the address. You'll be amazed at how many times people have changed offices since the time their material was published. So people sometimes think when they mail information, they're actually making sales. But remember, only sales are sales, not mailing out sales information that no one reads. You ask for 10 minutes of his time, and then you say, you be the judge. You can decide for yourself that this is what you're looking for. And you keep focusing on getting 10 minutes. Now, I found, and I've had salespeople call me, I had one salesperson call me I'd never heard before, cut through to me and said, hi, you don't know who I am, but I need 3 hours of your time to lay out what we can do for your company. 3 hours? I said, you must be out of your mind. My wife would like 3 hours of my time. No, I don't have 3 hours. And he insisted on 3 hours. He needed 3 hours. But if you ask for 3 hours or even 30 minutes, people are busy. But if you ask for 10, they'll put you in. If you ask for 10, they'll put you in. So nail down the time, nail down the place, nail down the date, and now you're on your way. Now, the next close you can use is called the approach close. Now, the approach close is something that you use right at the beginning of the sales presentation. The purpose of the approach close is to get the prospect to make a commitment to giving you a decision at the end of the presentation rather than him saying, I have to think it over. The approach close is a technique that you can use when you have a product or service that is used and needed by almost everybody you talk to. You have to recognize that sales resistance is the highest at the beginning of the sales presentation. The customer has sat on too many hot stoves, has burnt too many times. People are trying to sell them something hundreds of times a day, so everybody's in a state of tension, almost like a porcupine bristling when you first talk to them. So this is what I would do. When I meet the prospect for the first time, and they're polite and they're friendly, but you know their heart is beating and they're ready to be jumped on. By the way, two common fears that everyone has, everyone listening, everyone you talk to. Fear number one is the fear of being taken advantage of. That's because people have so many times. Fear number two is the fear of being hustled or manipulated by someone who's going to talk them into something that's not in their best interest. These fears are automatic. They're like switchblades. As soon as you say hello, the person knows you're in sales. Those two fears go on like two light switches. So just be aware that they're there. And this is what I would say. I'd say, Mr. Prospect, thank you very much for your time. I know how busy you are, which causes the prospect to relax a bit. And then I'd say, please relax, I'm not here to sell you anything right now. All I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some of the reasons why other people have bought this product and continue to buy it over the years. And all I ask you to do is just look at the reasons why others have bought it and judge for yourself. You can then tell me one way or another whether these reasons apply to you and your situation. Is that fair? I'll just show you why others have bought it, and you just tell me if it makes sense or not to you. Prospects will almost always say, oh, okay, you're not going to try to hustle me into a sale. They don't say this aloud. Then they'll say, okay, great. And then what you're doing is you're offering them a deal. The deal is, I won't try to sell you if you will listen with an open mind to my presentation. Now the customer listens with an open mind. Their guard drops. They have little or no sales resistance because you're not going to try to sell them anything. So then you ask them questions to find out if they're genuine prospects, what they want, what they need, and so on. You present your product or service as the ideal solution to their problems or fulfillment of their needs. And then at the end, you can ask a closing question. You can say, well, Mr. Prospect, what would you like to do at this time? Well, the prospect says, well, I have to think it over. You can say, Mr. Prospect, I appreciate that, but you promised to give me an answer one way or another if it made sense to you. It's a very simple close. You promised to give me an answer one way or another. And by the way, this will save you an enormous amount of time in life, because how much of your time is wasted going back over and over to people who won't say yes and won't say no? So you say, you promised to give me an answer one way or another. From what you said, it seems that this product is just ideal for your situation. Why don't you give it a try? Why don't you take it? And you can close the sale. Another close is called the demonstration close. And we used to use this. It's very effective. And you can use it right at the beginning. You can use it in almost any situation. The demonstration close is what you use to qualify the prospect with your opening words and to get a clear statement from him or her that he's in a position to buy and to pay for the product. We used to use this close when selling mutual funds or investments. I'd say, Mr. Prospect, if I could show you the very best investment you've ever seen, are you in a position to put $5,000 into it right now? And the prospect now, you've shifted the whole focus, not from whether or not the prospect is going to invest, but how much. The prospect might say, well, I don't know. I haven't got $5,000. could you invest 4? Well, I'm not sure. How about 3? Well, yes, if it's that good, I could invest $3,000. So now you've nailed down the fact that they have the money if you can demonstrate the offer that you made in your opening sentence. So if I could show you a great investment, you could put $3,000 in it right now. Well, yes, I could afford $3,000. Now you've changed the focus of the discussion. The discussion is no longer about whether or not the prospect listens to your presentation. The focus of the discussion now is, can you, the salesperson, demonstrate or prove that you actually have an investment or a product that is good, as good as you say? Another thing you could say, and I did this as well, if I can show you the best sales training program that you've ever seen, are you in a position to commit yourself to it right now? If the prospect says, well, if it's that good, I can make a decision right now, then you go through your presentation. At the end of the presentation, the prospect can't say, well, I have to check it with the boss, I have to talk to Harry, I have to check our budget. He's told you in advance that he can make the decision. Sometimes we say, Mr. Prospect, Mrs. Prospect, if I show you exactly what you're looking for, are you in a position to commit to a $300 purchase without reference to a third party? In other words, can you make the decision yourself? So they can't come back and say, well, I have to talk it over with someone else. Always ask, if I show you exactly what you're looking for, can you make this kind of a decision without reference to a third party? And if they say yes, they can't come back and get out at the end. They've already said, yes, I have the money, yes, I'm qualified, yes, I'm in a position to make a decision. So a good, strong opening question that grabs attention and offers to give the prospect exactly what he wants is very powerful. If your question is well phrased, remember the only answer should be, what is it? Or, tell me more about it. Or, how does it work exactly? If I could show you exactly what you're looking for, are you in a position to make a decision today? By the way, in real estate, we encourage people to use this over and over again. One of the first questions you should ask people when you take them out is, if we could find the exact house you're looking for at a price that makes sense to you, when would you want to take possession? And if you're speaking to a bona fide couple that's going to buy a house, they'll say, well, you know, we'll want it the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and so on. You can ask them as you get into the car. Sometimes they may tell you that they don't know. Sometimes they may tell you that they're not in the market at all. They're just taking up your time looking at houses because they have some spare time. But don't be afraid to ask. Now, the next close is called the hot button close. And the hot button close is considered by many sales professionals to be the most powerful technique of all. And by the way, based on interviews with tens of thousands of customers, we find that almost all customers settle on a key benefit or single attribute of a product or service that is what tips them over the edge. Your job, and imagine your boss is going to grill you when you come back to the office, your job is to find out what it is, like a sales detective. Find out the one thing that would cause this person to buy if they were convinced that they would get it. So it's based on the fact that 80% of the buying decision is determined by 20% of the product features and benefits. In my experience, probably 90% of the buying decision is determined by 10% of the product benefits. So it's up to you to find out what it is, the one thing that will cause the prospect to act more than anything else. And you then push this hot button over and over again. Every time you mention it or repeat it, the prospect's buying desire to own your product or service, increases like a thermometer on a hot day. And by the way, every time you talk about something that is not really important to the buyer, his desire to purchase it goes down. So good salespeople are those who question skillfully and listen carefully to the answers. They listen for what is called the Freudian slip. The Freudian slip concept says that if you ask enough questions and you give prospects enough opportunity to buy, they will tell you everything that you need to know to sell them. That's why the old saying, telling is not selling, is true. You're only really selling when you're asking questions and giving them the opportunity to tell you what they're looking for, what they want, what they need, what they're concerned about, what their worries are. You're only really selling when you're listening attentively to the answers to your questions. And the more you ask questions and listen, the more likely it is that the prospect will say, this is what I'm looking for. This is the key benefit. By the way, we used to ask this question, and it's very simple. Mr. Prospect, if ever you were going to buy a product or service like this, what would cause you to buy it at that time? And sometimes they say, well, if ever I was going to buy one of these, I'd have to be sure of this. And they'll give you the hot button. They'll give you the key benefit. They'll give you the one thing you have to convince them of to get the sale. Now, the next close is called the trial close. The trial close is a technique that you can use over and over again to find out how well you're doing. Sometimes it's called the check close. You check on how, on the progress of the sale. Sometimes you call it the pulse close. It's like taking the pulse of the patient. And what you do is you present a part of your product or service offering, and then you ask, what do you think of this? Do you like this? Does this make sense to you? Is this what you're looking for? Is this what you have in mind? Would this be an improvement over what you're doing right now? These are all trial closes. The best thing about a trial close is the prospect can answer no, and it doesn't end the presentation. Because the prospect says, no, I don't like that color, or no, I wouldn't use that feature, or something like that. So you say, that's great. And it tells you where you are, tells you not to spend too much time talking about that, but go on to other aspects of your product or service that are more attractive. For example, if you're showing a home, you could ask, is this the sort of layout that you're looking for? The prospect might say, no. You say, well, that's good, because we have several other layouts. You could say, do you like this color? The prospect says, yes. Well, you know that you're getting closer to a sale. If the prospect says, no, I don't like that color, you can say, well, that's all right. We have several other colors available. I use a trial or check close as like a signpost at a crossroads that tells you which way to go. Imagine you're traveling down the road and you come to a fork, and at the fork you say, how do you like this? Are we on the right track? At the next fork, you check again to make sure that the customer is still happy with what you're showing to him or her. Now, here's the difference between top salespeople and average salespeople. Top salespeople continually ask trial closes throughout the presentation. Would they drive up in front of the house and they say, how do you like the outside look of this house? Come in the door and they say, how do you think about this entry hallway? Do you like this color scheme? How do you like this kitchen? Do you like the way the living room is laid out? In other words, they keep asking for feedback. Now, another form of closing technique is called the power of suggestion close. The power of suggestion close is based on the fact that we're all very susceptible to the suggestive influences of people around us. For example, when someone is excited about something, that excitement is contagious. Other people can become excited as well. When a person becomes enthusiastic about something, that enthusiasm can be contagious, as we said before. Now, the way you use the power of suggestion close is by creating emotions in the prospect with words or pictures. These are called vivid mind pictures or emotional mental images. For example, you can say with regard to a car, you're really going to enjoy the way this car handles on the road. My brother has one of these cars and he just loves the way it grips the road when he corners. In other words, you paint a picture of the prospect enjoying the product or service, the prospect in the car and moving. You talk to the prospect as though he already owns the product or service that you're selling. You say, you're really going to be happy when you travel in this car this summer. Or, you're really going to enjoy this holiday in Europe. When you walk down the streets of Prague at night and it's all lit up and there's music and bands playing, and you just love Prague in the summertime. In other words, you create emotional pictures of the customer in the picture enjoying the product or service. You're going to love living in this neighborhood. This is one of the best and quietest neighborhoods in this whole part of the city. The people around here are really nice. You paint a picture of how nice it will be to live in this home, in this neighborhood. As you use these emotional mind pictures, their thinking changes. Instead of thinking, should I buy it or not, they're now starting to think of how they're going to enjoy it once they own it. By the way, we call these ownership and enjoyment questions. We ask questions that assume that the person already has made the buying decision, already owns and is using and enjoying the product or service. And you talk past the sale. We talk about how happy they'll be. Remember, the primary reason for buying anything is emotional. Customers are 100% emotional. They make decisions emotionally, and then they decide logically or rationally. Your job is to get them emotionally involved in how attractive, how enjoyable the product or service is. According to a University of Chicago study, again, they found that how the customer thinks he or she will feel after the buying decision is the critical determinant of whether he or she buys in the first place. When you talk about other people who bought this product or service and how happy they were and what they told you about how excited they were, how much they enjoyed it, what benefit they got, how glad they were that they made this buying decision. Whenever you talk about other people experiencing a positive emotion who bought your product or service, you increase the buying desire in the person you're talking to. Now, there's another close called the ascending close. The ascending close is often called the part-by-part close or the yes-yes-yes close. This closing technique can be used for any product or service, and it's very popular in selling mutual funds, investments, property, almost any type of product or service. What you do is you ask questions where the customer answers yes. Do you like this color? Yes. Is this something that would fit into your home? Yes. Is this something your family would like? Yes. Does the price make sense to you so far? Yes. The more times you can ask a person yes questions, the more they come to want to own the product or service. And many of the best-selling presentations I've seen have been very carefully developed so that they have as many as 10, 20, 30. One presentation I saw cost $250,000 and had 42 yes questions. And the final yes was to take delivery of the product or service, to pay for it. So you have to ask questions. And they start with very simple questions. I remember the encyclopedia salespeople used to knock on the door, and the first question they'd ask is, hello there, do you live here? It's a very good question, because if the person didn't live there, there's no point in giving a presentation about owning encyclopedias in your home. Do you live here? The person would say yes. Do you believe in the value of higher education? Yes. Do you have children? Yes. Do you believe in that education will be helpful to them when they grow up? Yes. Just a whole series of questions to get the person saying yes five or six times is, could I take a couple of minutes of your time to show you something you might like? Yes. And the sales presentation is on its way. So asking yes questions, we say every time you ask a yes question, the buying temperature or desire to buy goes up 3 degrees. Every time you ask a no question, the buying desire goes down 5 degrees. So your job is to ask as many yes questions as possible. Now, another closing technique you can use is called the invitational close. The invitational close is used when you simply invite the prospect to make a buying decision. My favorite invitational close is simply, why don't you give it a try? Why don't you give it a try? Do you like what I've shown you so far? Well, then why don't you give it a try? Sometimes you can say, does this make sense to you so far? Yes. Well, why don't you give it a try? Or why don't you take it? Or why don't you buy it? If you sell services, by the way, a very powerful way is you say, do you like what I've shown you so far? Or yes, do you have any questions or concerns I haven't covered? No. Then why don't you give us a try? Why don't you give us, the great big company who will embrace you and take care of you, why don't you give us a try? Another version is when you're selling a hard product, why don't you take it? If you're showing them an automobile, a car, furniture, anything that's a hard product, do you like it? Why don't you take it? Why don't you drive it away? Why don't you buy it? It's amazing how many customers are on the verge of buying when you simply ask them the question, why don't you take it? I had a friend who sold homes, and after showing homes, he would say, well, how do you like the home? They say, good. He said, well, let's go and look at the next house. After this seminar, he went, next time he showed a couple of house, he said, how do you like the house? They said, well, it looks pretty good. He said, why don't you buy it? And they look at each other. What do you think, Harry? Well, I don't know. It's nice as a nice house as we've seen. Well, yeah. Well, why don't you just put in an offer on it, see what happens? And he would just take out the offer form and start writing it up right there in the car. And his sales went up 32%. The first month, he began inviting people to make a buying decision. Why don't you take it? Why don't you make an offer? Why don't we get started with it right away? How soon would you like to get going? Now, there's a story of the salesperson who comes back to the office and says, boy, I have a lot of good interviews today. The other salesperson says, yeah, I didn't sell anything either. Remember, you don't offend people by asking them to make a buying decision once they've indicated an interest in owning or enjoying the benefits of your product or service. Don't be afraid to ask or to invite them to buy. Now, another close is called the price close. Salespeople often say to me that everybody buys everything on price. You ever heard that before? Price is the key thing. Everybody wants the lowest price and so on. However, in almost every case, the price is not the major reason why anybody buys anything. Price is only important when you're selling a commodity, something like rice or orange juice futures, where there's an identical brand, size, shape, and quality everywhere and from everyone. And nothing that you are selling is a commodity. What you are selling is a specialized product. Your job is to put price in its place. If a prospect says, how much is it? And the salesperson tells them the price, and he immediately says, well, that's too much. I can get it cheaper somewhere else. Your competitor sells it for less. Then the salesperson tries to defend the price and gets into a wrestling match with the prospect. The salesperson says, well, it's X number of dollars. The prospect immediately replies, I can't afford it. Salesperson, but it's worth it. The prospect says, well, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. The salesperson, yeah, but it's not as good as the one we've got. And soon, you get into an argument that goes around in circles. The fact is, you never win by arguing on the basis of price. The basic rule on price is this, is that price should never come up in a sales presentation until the end of the presentation. Here's our discovery. Until the customer has said, I like it, I want it, it looks good, if you bring up price before that, if you start talking about price before the customer has made it clear that they understand and want your product or service, you'll kill the sale. Price out of place kills the sale. Price out of place kills the sale. So, another closing technique is the just suppose close. Have you ever heard this when the prospect says, well, I'm not sure if I can afford it or out in the market? You say, well, Mr. Prospect, just suppose that price is not an obstacle and that we can deal to your with your price concerns to your complete satisfaction. If we could do that, would you be interested in going ahead? Or the prospect starts asking about price earlier in the conversation. You say, Mr. Prospect, just suppose that price is not an obstacle. Can we get back to that in just a moment so I can finish my presentation? So use just suppose. The person says, well, I'm not in the market right now. Well, just suppose that that's not an obstacle to proceed. Or I don't like the color. Well, just suppose we can get it in the ideal color. Or I need it sooner than that. Well, just suppose we could move up to delivery day. Whenever you say just suppose, you literally brush aside whatever objection it is and enable you to go on selling. The person says, well, I can't do it because of this. Just suppose we could satisfy you on that completely. Would you be prepared to go ahead? So another closing technique you can use is the sudden death close. Now, the sudden death close is sometimes called the ultimatum close. We use this close when you've been talking to a prospect over and over. The prospect won't say yes and they won't say no. They won't say yes and they won't say no. And you've invested all this time, and now you're getting frustrated, but you don't want to give up on the prospect because you've already spent so much time. So what do? Well, what you do is you put together your sales agreement, contract, proposal, exactly the way you discussed it. You fill out all the details. And you call up the prospect, say, look, I've got something I have to show you. There's something you need to see. By this time, the prospect's seen you several times. They invite you back. And you say, Mr. Prospect, I've given this a lot of thought, and either this is a good idea for you or it's not. But one way or another, why don't we make a decision right now? I know how valuable your time is, and I know how valuable my time is, so why don't we make a decision right now? And then you take your contract, you put your pen on it, you put a tick mark next to the place where you want a signature, you turn it around and you push it across the desk, and you remain perfectly silent. We say, he who speaks first loses. You just remain perfectly silent, you smile at the prospect, and the prospect sits there, looks at you, looks at the agreement, looks at you, looks at the agreement, and realizes this is an ultimatum. This is sudden death. If the prospect doesn't buy it this time, you're not coming back. You're not going to keep on calling on this prospect if you don't get an answer. Well, what we have found, and they've tracked this, by the way, is that in 59% of cases, the indecisive, procrastinating prospect will pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down, look at you, look at it, and say yes, and buy the product. In 41% of cases, the prospect will finally say, well, no, I don't think we're going to go ahead with it at this time. But in either case, you're free. In either case, you're back to work. In either case, it's like a huge load off your shoulders. You've finally gotten a decisive answer. And you say, well, that's great. Thank you very much. You either wrap up the sale or give them your business card one more time and say, please call me if you ever change your mind, and get back to making new calls. It's a wonderful closing technique. Now, another closing technique you can use is very powerful. It's called the sharp angle close. And you use the sharp angle close to close on an objection. In many cases, the prospect will say, you know, I can't afford the monthly payments. Well, you say, well, let me go back to the office and see if we can't work out a payment plan to lower the payments and spread them over a longer period of time. Instead, what you do is you say this, Mr. Prospect, if we could lower the monthly payments, would you take it? If we could spread the payments over an extra year and get them down $100 a month, would you take it? I don't like the color. Mr. Prospect, if we get you exactly the color you like, would you take it? Well, I would need it by Friday, and you take 2 or 3 weeks for delivery. Mr. Prospect, if we could rush order it and have it to you by Friday, would you take it? You see, whenever you ask, if we could, would you, it forces the prospect to take a position. It forces the prospect to say, yes, I'll take it, or no, there's something else. And what you're looking for is the real reason that's causing the prospect to hesitate. So what you do is you just offer each time you get an objection. You say, if we could handle that for you to your complete satisfaction, would you take it? If they say yes, then you come back and you say, what would it take to satisfy you on that point? What would it take to satisfy you on that point? Not long ago, in December of last year, I went to Nordstrom stores to buy my wife a St. John's knit, which is a very expensive dress. I'd gone through her closet. I knew what clothes she had. I knew what sizes she wore, top and bottom. I went down to Nordstrom's, to the St. John's knit department. I looked at everything they had, and there was nothing that was suitable except for one outfit. But the outfit was in the wrong size. And by this time, of course, being a typical male, I didn't want to be in the store any longer. And so I said, well, I guess you don't have the right size, so forget about it. I'll get something else. And she said, if we could get it for you in the right size, would you take it? I said, well, how would you do that? She said, I'll call the downtown store and see if they have it. I said, well, I don't know. She said, let's just call the downtown store. And she led me over to the cash register. They phoned, went out of the computer, called the downtown store, and lo and behold, they had exactly my wife's size and exactly the right dress in the downtown store. She said this. I said, well, you know, I'm not going to go downtown. It's too far and so on. She said, if I could have it back here for you in an hour, would you take it? I said, she said, you could finish your Christmas shopping for the rest of your family, be back here in an hour, would you take it? And I said, how would you do that? She said, I'd go down and get it myself. I said, well, all right, if you could do that, I'll come back in an hour. She said, I'll have a gift wrap for you, ready to go, 60 minutes. And 60 minutes later, I went back to the cash register, and there it was, gift wrap, ready to go. She used the sharp angle close on me. She closed on the objection. Does it work? It's very, very powerful. Whenever they say, well, I don't like this or I don't like that, if we could remove that, if we could resolve that, if we could do this for you. Here's a closing technique that a friend of mine told me made him a multimillionaire. It's called the instant reverse close. And this close requires that you're quick on your feet. Prospect says, I can't afford it. And what you do is you use this instant reverse close. It takes a little bit of courage the first time, and you immediately respond by saying, that's exactly why you should buy it. Prospect says, what? What do you mean? I said, I couldn't afford it. You say, Mr. Prospect, then that's exactly why you should take it today, because you'll never get it at a lower price. If ever you're going to get this item, and I'm sure you are sometime in the future, you should get it now because the price is the best. Prospect can say, I'm not in the market right now. Mr. Prospect, it's exactly why you should get it now. Because by the time you get in the market, this item won't be available at this price. So whatever they tell you, when the prospect says, for instance, I'm not interested, we encourage people to say, that's exactly why I'm calling. I didn't think you'd be interested. What? Mr. Prospect, most of our very best customers were not interested when we first called on them, but now they've become our best customers and they recommend us to their friends. Let me show you what we've got and you can decide for yourself. It's amazing how powerful an instant reverse close is. Now, another close is called the change places close. This is very simple. When the prospect is hesitating and they won't say yes and they won't say no and they won't give you the reason why they're not buying, they say, Mr. Prospect, would you change places with me just for a second? The prospect stops. Now, you've created a visual image. Imagine that you were me and I was you. And imagine that you're the salesperson. You're talking to a very intelligent customer, and the customer has something that's holding him back from making a decision, and he wouldn't tell you what it was. How would you handle that? This will almost invariably cause the customer to say, oh, well, the reason is this. They, by changing places, will see the dilemma that you're in, and they will tell you what's holding them back. And then you can use a instant reverse. That's exactly why you should take it. You can use a sharp angle. If we could satisfy you on that, would you take it? And so on. So it's very powerful. You say, Mr. Prospect, would you change places for me just a second? Put yourself in my shoes and say, imagine that you were a salesperson and you were talking to a very intelligent prospect and the prospect wouldn't tell you why, yes or no. How would you handle it? What would you do? You'd be amazed what they would do for you. Sometimes they'll say, well, it's the money. And how much money? A secondary close is a wonderful closing technique. That's where you close on a smaller item, a smaller part of the sale. For example, if you're selling a home, you say, would you like to take occupancy on the 1st or the 15th? Whichever they choose, it's a secondary or a small premise. They say 1st or 15th, you've made the sale of the house. You're selling an expensive automobile. You say, would you like the standard factory tires or the factory or the Michelin racing tires? Whichever they say yes to, they've made a decision to buy the car. If you say, for example, when you're talking about a product or service, you say, now, would you want the billing sent to your home or to your office address? If they say home or office, it's a secondary issue, but by saying yes to the secondary issue, they decided to buy the product. Now, here's another example called the alternative close. And sometimes we call it the preference close. The alternative close is you give a person a choice between two items. You say, would you like A or B, the blue or the red, the large or the medium size? If you're selling a single item, you say, would you like to take it today or have it shipped to you? Would you like to pay cash or check? Would you like to have it sent to your office or to your home? In other words, you always give the person an alternative way of buying or an alternative product or service to purchase. Human beings love alternatives. So when you give them an alternative, Each one, whichever they take, A or B, you've made a sale. Now, another thing you can do is the preference close, is just by saying, which of these do you prefer? This one or that one? Which date would you prefer? What time would you prefer? If you're calling a restaurant and you're thinking of going there, what time would you prefer to come? Or what size of a policy would you prefer to have? Or which of these cars would you prefer? Or which of these systems would you prefer? Asking what people prefer is very powerful. Another close is called the assumption close. And the assumption close is often called the talking past the sale close. This is where you simply assume that the person has decided to buy. You talk exactly as if he just said, yes, I'll take it. You assume the sale, and then you say, oh, by the way, how would you like to make payment? Or where would you want this delivered? Or how soon do you need it? Just as if the person said, yes, I'll take it, you just ask a question that assumes that they decided to buy it. Sometimes, when the prospect has just reached the end, they'll say, oh, send it to my home, or I'll give you a credit card, you accept MasterCard, and so on. If you assume the person has bought it, it has a powerful suggestive influence on the customer's decision-making process. Now, another close is called the takeaway close. It's a great close. The takeaway close is even before the prospect says yes or no, you begin to suggest that the prospect may not be available. You say, I'm not even sure if we have these in stock anymore. Or the prospect's looking at this or looking at that, and you say, you know, I think this is the last one we have, and somebody else has already put in an offer on it. We find that customers often don't know how much they want a product or service until you suggest that they can't have it. You know, the old hard-to-get routine that we used to play in high school. So you say, well, I'm not sure if it's available. Let me check and see if we have any left. I'm not at all sure. A person suddenly wants it very badly. If they say, yes, go ahead and check, they've made the decision to buy. Sometimes you can say, you know, this may not be the right thing for you at this time. As soon as you say that, they say, well, wait a minute, why not? Well, this is really for people who are very experienced in this area or have a very good sense for who they are and what they want and so on. In other words, you can set up qualifiers and say, well, wait a minute, you know, it just may be the right thing for me. So when you threaten or offer to take away a product or service, it often increases dramatically the perceived value. Now, another close is called the puppy dog close. The puppy dog close is where you let people take the product or service and use it or try it out for a while. When Lexus first came into the U.S., brand new car, very expensive, Japanese car, mid-sized luxury car, people were reluctant to give it a try because it was new, there'd be lots of defects and bugs in the first year and so on. So they had this wonderful little technique. They said, here, take the car, drive it for a month. If you don't like it, bring it back and we'll tear up all the papers. You can walk away with your old car. I say, what? Just try it out for a month. We're the only company in the history of the world that allowed people to drive a car for a month, decide if they wanted to keep it. A perfect puppy dog close. It launched Lexus into the American market, made one of the most famous and most profitable brands in the history of automobile manufacturing. The puppy dog close, by the way, comes from when the pet shop owner is there with the parents and the children. The child wants that dog. I'd love to have that dog. And the parents don't want a dog because it's dirty and smelly and everything else. And the pet shop owner says, look, why don't you just take the dog home for the weekend and play with the dog, and if you don't like it, bring it back on Monday. So they take the dog home, and after two or three days, the child has lost interest in the dog, and the parents have fallen in love with the dog, and they buy the dog and pay for it and keep it. So giving people something to try, giving them a test drive for a car, giving them a product or service to try. Many resorts will actually invite people to come and stay for a weekend and then look at owning part of the resort as a part of their permanent retirement. The puppy dog close is very powerful if you have a product or service that people can touch, taste, feel, use, and so on. Now, the final close I want to talk about is called the I want to think it over close. And the I want to think it over close is something that you get all the time. I want to think it over. Let me think it over. Let me think about it. And what we have found is this close is impossible to get past unless you have a technique. So this is what we say. So when a person says, well, let me think it over, instead of arguing, you stop and you say, Mr. Prospect, that's a good idea. This is an important decision, and it causes the prospect to relax. He's off the hook. The stress or tension of making a buying decision has been removed. You then say, Mr. Prospect, obviously you have a good reason for wanting to think it over. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Is it the price? And then remain perfectly silent. Now, the prospect can come back and say one of two things. They can say, yes, it's the price, or no, it's not. If they say, yes, it's the price, then you say, well, how far apart are we? How do you mean exactly? What will we have to do with the price to make it work for you today? But whatever they say, you've got a chance to make the sale. Now you know that it's the money. If the prospect says, no, it's not the price, and usually it's not at this point, you say, Mr. Prospect, if it's not the price, then may I ask what it is? And then remain perfectly silent. And when the prospect says, well, it's actually this, it's usually a very sensitive issue to the prospect, so go very slowly, very sensitively. You say, well, Mr. Prospect, sharp angle close, if we could satisfy you on that point completely, would you take it? And if the prospect says, well, yes, if you could satisfy me on that point, then you use the final closing technique. Mr. Prospect, what would it take to satisfy you on that point? What would it take to satisfy you on that point? And if the prospect gives you the answer and you can satisfy it, you can make the sale. The last close is called the summary close. You use this at the end of the presentation. You say, now, let me just go briefly over what we've talked about, and then you summarize what you've just discussed and explained, and you summarize the features and benefits one by one. You go down through the entire list, right down to the last reason why he or she should buy. And then you ask, can you think of anything else? Have we covered everything? And when the prospect says, no, I think that's pretty much it, you say, well, then let's get started on it right away. You assume the sale. Why don't you give it a try? You use an invitational close. Is this what you had in mind? Use a trial close. Or why don't you just take it? You see, when you develop the ability to ask closing questions over and over again, and by the way, in the notes that we'll send you, there will be additional closes that you can use, that you can study. We're going to be sending you actually an ebook on closing. And when you try out these different closing techniques, the more you try them, you'll find that you'll settle down to about 3 to 5 techniques. These techniques, you become so fluent on them that you'll be able to use them and ask them over and over again. Each time the opportunity arises, it will flow out of your mouth. I've had people all over the world tell me this. They said, you know, I was in that situation, and I knew I was going to lose the sale, he said, and then I remembered the words. I remembered the words from your program, and I said the words, and I got the sale. I had a young man tell me recently that he made a $2,000 commission. He's 23 years old on a lost sale because at the last minute, he remembered the words. So if you listen to this CD over and over again, and you review the notes that we send to you over and over again, pretty soon the words will be automatic for you as well. And every time you're in a selling situation, you will remember the words, and you'll get the sale. Okay, let me answer any questions you have. If you'd like to answer a question, push *0 to ask questions, and we'll put you in the queue, and then the moderator will give me the questions, and I'll ask them for you, or I'll answer them for you. Push *0 to get back into the seminar room, if you like, and ask the moderator questions, and she'll give them to me. Hello.
Okay. Hi, my name is Tommy. I'll be your operator today, sir.
Okay, Tom.
Hey, okay, we got our first question coming from John. John, please state your question.
It's John Clemens.
Hi, John.
And I've seen your seminar live and try to hear everyone, and I must say that I've always gained something and come back with an increased sale directly as a result. So anybody who's on the fence, they should join your program and take part.
Thank you, John.
I wanted to know the thing you might have explained it before. When do they send the CD and the notes? And I had another question related to sales.
Well, the CD will come to you in about 7 to 10 days. What we do is we have it edited, and we send it to you very quickly, and we'll send out the notes 24 hours after this seminar.
Okay. The other thing, this is, let's call it the star. I have two customers in particular, one that actually called in. I sell ad space in church bulletins.
Yes.
And said that he wanted to be there. I went through the drill, and he said yes, he was going to do it. He's a painter, and said he was busy, and this little, whatever you want to call it, has been going on for over a month. And I have talked to him several times subsequent, and his answer each time is, John, I know I've been busy. I'm going to do it. I, in other words, he doesn't say get lost or anything. The other was a customer that signed up for a sale, a maid service, and that she actually gave me her home phone number or cell number and was very forthcoming. and sent it through, paid for the thing in full. There was a glitch in a credit card. And for the past 3 weeks now, all I get is her answering machine, and she doesn't call back. I'm sure other people have had this similar situation. That is, they said they want, they didn't dust you off. What do you advise to get both of these people off the dime, Brian?
Okay, the first one is the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur is swamped with work, just like almost everybody here. He means to do it. I've worked with entrepreneurs. It takes 6 months to make a buying decision. So you offer to do it for him. You say, let us design the ad. All you have to do, I'll bring it by. All you have to do is initial it, and we'll run it. In other words, make it easy for your customer to buy. Sometimes we make it too hard for customers to buy. We insist that they go through a series of hoops, jump through a series of hoops. And so make it easy for them. Remember, entrepreneurs are drowning. They're like deer in the headlights. They are running the whole time. And they mean to do it, but they don't have the time. So take that time constraint away from him. Offer to design the ad for him. Take it. It's much easier for him to edit it or correct it and for you to run it. With the other one, I'm afraid you're dealing with a deadbeat. And you know that in your heart of hearts. There are many people who use this exact same technique. They use a bogus credit card or a bank account that has no money. There's lots of people that actually just open a bank account with $25 and get checks, and they write as many checks as they can. Or they get a credit card with almost no balance, and they buy as many things as they can, hoping it's like you've heard of the person who goes into the seafood restaurant and orders a dozen oysters, hoping to find a pearl in the oyster with which to pay for the dinner, for which he doesn't have any money. A lot of people do that. In maid services, they're hoping if they run the ad, they'll get enough business to be able to pay for the ad, but they don't have it, which is why it's so important to get payment in full in advance. So important. When people say, can I get credit or anything else, you say, we'd like to, but our directors have told us we're not allowed to be a bank to our customers. And so we encourage our customers to use their own banks rather than us. We had the same problem for years, and we finally stopped carrying credit. Everything was cash. And people complained a little bit who had been, you know, stringing us out for months. They complained a little bit, but from then on we had no problems. So that's the best answer I can give you. Thank you, John. Next question.
Okay, our next question comes from Paul. Paul, please state your question.
Yes, the question is, how do you handle life insurance sales in a call center?
Right. Well, let me give you more information, Paul.
Most 100% of all the sales are done over the phone. It's not face-to-face.
Right.
So what would be the most effective way of creating the desire for the person to make the commitment rather than you just going through the proposal, giving them a price, and hoping they will call you back?
Well, okay, the starting point has to do with qualifying. If you qualify well, it's like a 60-yard kickoff in a Super Bowl game. You qualify well, you're way down the field. Customers have three needs or three factors that lead to a sale. One is they have a goal that is unachieved that your product or service can help them to achieve. Or they have a need that is unsatisfied that your product, in this case your service, can help them satisfy. Or they have a problem unsolved. You have to be absolutely clear with them what that is. And it could very well be as simple as wanting to have the most insurance for the lowest possible price. But I said before that people don't buy what a product is. They only buy what it does. And I've worked with almost every major life insurance company in the world. And the top salespeople in those companies focus on what it does in terms of peace of mind, in terms of not having to worry about it, in terms of having yourself and your family or your business completely covered. In other words, they talk about the peace and the security that you'll have as soon as you make this decision. And they start off by asking why, when they speak to them the first time, if you were to purchase life insurance or to purchase more insurance or different insurance, why would you do it? And they ask the question right at the beginning, why would you do it? And find out what reason this person has to purchase life insurance from you. And then they use the hot button close. And they continually remind them that if they do buy this insurance from you, this is what they'll get, and they will get it immediately. You'll get the peace of mind. You'll get the security. You won't have to worry anymore. You know that you'll be fully covered no matter what happens. And you keep repeating what the insurance does for them, not what it is. When you talk about what it is and how it's designed and the payment schedule and whether it's term or a variable or full whole life or anything else, when you talk about any of that, people's eyes glaze over. But when you talk about what it does, and for them and their families, and how soon they want it to start doing that, that's what will cause them to buy right in the phone. Next question.
Okay. Our next question comes from Carlos. Carlos, please state your question.
Mortgage life insurance.
Yes.
I'm looking for a catchy phrase when I call them on the phone to set up the appointments that the program will pay off the house and also the program will return 100% of the premium at the end of 15 years. What would be a good catchy phrase to open up the
Well, the most Carlos, the most popular word in all languages is the word free, is that we offer free free mortgage insurance for qualified prospects. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions to see if you qualify. Because the fact is that if they are a fully qualified prospect, which means that they do buy the insurance and they do make payments for 15 years, then they'll get their money back and it will turn out to have been free. So I say we offer free mortgage insurance for qualified homeowners. Could I ask you a couple of questions to see if you qualify for this special offer? Whenever you offer somebody something free, you touch upon a nerve, like touching upon an electrical live wire. It causes them to get jerked because you'll have their total attention when you offer to do it free. And then explain, let me explain what I mean by free. Try that. It's very powerful. I've been using it for years in my own work. Next question.
Our next question comes from David. David, please state your question.
Yeah, I do some business coaching and life coaching, and my one-on-one sales is, you know, I maintain a pretty good 90% range.
Right.
I'm moving into more of a group and presentation and looking for more of a stage close and how, you know, it's just a new animal for me and trying to see what ideas that I can use to help in a stage close.
So let me ask you, you say you're moving into group coaching?
Yes.
And you're talking to a group of people about your coaching process, and you want to close them to become part of a coaching group or close them so that they become individual clients?
So that they'll be in a group training to
okay.
get as a group.
Well, here's an interesting point, is people will listen in a group, but they won't buy in a group. And they won't buy there. So when you give a group presentation, remember, it's what you might call a two-part or even a three-part close. The first part is to address the benefits that a person gets from the process. I've been doing group coaching now for 7 years, 8 years, so I know very much the process. And then all you want to do with cards on the tables is you want to elicit interest. If you would like to know more about how this process can specifically help you achieve your goals faster and more efficiently, then I'd like a couple of minutes to talk to you. I'd like to be able to talk to you personally. Just fill out the card with your name, number, and availability. So let me repeat. You can sell to people in a group, but they do not buy in a group. They only buy with individual conversation. And if you've been trying to get people to buy in a group, then I'm sure you found a lot of frustration because people won't do it.
Our next question comes from Fred.
Hello, Fred.
Hello, Brian. And I'm calling from Vancouver, Canada, and I just want to thank you for the very educational hour.
Thank you.
No worries. I'm responsible currently to design the content and the strategies to train about 1,500 salespeople across the nation. And
right.
These people consist of non-sales background, demographically probably between 40 to 60 and female, and love the product. And my question is, in your experience, what area would you suggest to focus on in this skill set of closing, their initial mindset, the varying close techniques, or maybe even something else?
Well, if you're speaking to females in this group, is it a beauty product or a health product?
No, it's a travel product, Brian.
Travel product.
Cruising.
What kind? What is it?
Cruising.
Cruising. Okay, then the most important thing is to focus on relationship selling. Focus on communications. This group is very, very tense about the idea of selling. What has been most successful for me over the years is to say, this is not really selling at all. This is really methods to communicate more effectively to build higher quality long-term relationships with people. And so you focus the whole thing on communication skills and techniques. And within those, you have techniques that help people to make better decisions, closing techniques. You have techniques to build higher qualities of trust, credibility, rapport, and to fully understand what people want to accomplish, what their budgets are, and so on, qualifying techniques. You just rephrase them differently to take away the fear. Remember, most people are traumatized by the idea of selling because of the potential for rejection. Mm-hmm. So you say, so what I would do is I would title the whole program differently, which I've done in the past. I say, this is going to be on communicating, negotiating, persuading, and relationship building. Oh, that sounds like a great program. And then you refer back to them. And when you teach them, you talk to them about how they get their kids to go to bed on time, how they influence their friends, how they get their spouses to agree with them to go out for dinner, and so on. And just link it back into their own personal life. So basically saying what they're doing is they're going to be building up a circle of a large circle of friends, a large circle of relationships to come to rely on them for expert advice to help them plan their family vacations, that sort of thing. Then they'll be wide open to it. Next question.
Okay. Our next question comes from Dave. Dave, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my question today.
Hi, Dave.
I work for an internet marketing company.
Right.
And our biggest objection is that when we get to the end of the calls, everything's over the phone, that these individuals typically say, well, just send me more information. And I'd like to know just your feedback on how we could be a little more successful in getting a decision on the spot.
Okay, there's two or three rules in selling, and we ignore them. And I ignore them, too. I have to give myself a whack on the head because we jump ahead in the process. It's like dialing a telephone number, but not dialing the first two or three digits, and only dialing them later, and wonder why we don't get through. The first rule is no need, no sale. So you have to spend a good deal of time fully understanding the person's needs. What are they doing now? How is it working? What are the challenges or problems they have? If they were ever to change, why would they change at that time? What would they want more of or less of? The more time you spend focusing on this, we call this the examination phase. Like in when you go to a doctor, the doctor takes a good deal of time to examine you very carefully and will often not even give you a diagnosis in the first meeting. The doctor will take tests and say, look, let's set up another appointment for you to come back in about 8 or 9 days. We'll get the test back, and then we'll look at everything we have and see where we are. So instead of rushing in to the prescription, which is what we have a tendency to do on the phone, is take the time to do the diagnosis, to do the examination, to ask questions. And then the next rule is no authority, or no money, no sale. Is you have to make sure the person you're talking to is the person who is the decision maker. In the book Solution Selling, they have an expression called access to power. And power means the power of the purse. So that you have to know the person you're talking to has either the power of the purse or has access to the power of the person. In other words, this person could say yes or no. Often people will not tell you the truth. So one of the questions we encourage people to ask is, Would there be anyone in addition to yourself who would be involved in making a decision of this kind? You can ask that right at the beginning. If you ask it at the beginning, they'll tell you the right answer. If you don't ask it at the beginning, later on they will huffle and buffle, and because their ego is involved, they don't want to tell you that they don't have the authority, and that in many cases their opinion is not listened to by their bosses. The third thing is no urgency, no sale. If there's no urgency, like there's no reason to buy it today, then people will procrastinate. What we know about customers is that they will delay endlessly on a purchase decision if there's no good reason to buy today. So therefore, in every single case, there's got to be a good reason for them to buy now. If they don't buy now, if they buy now, there has to be a benefit. If they don't buy now, there has to be a penalty. But a benefit or a penalty is of no value until they have told you, I like it, I want it, we need it, we can use it, we can benefit from it. If they haven't reached that point, you can't get them to buy. And so therefore, starting right at the beginning by finding out what is the problem they have that your product or service can solve? What's the goal they have that your product or service can help them achieve? What's the need they have that your product or service can help them satisfy? And make sure they have that clearly before you ask for the order. They should reach the point, if your presentation is done properly, should reach the point where they say, well, it sounds pretty good. How do I get it? It sounds pretty good. What's the next step? It sounds pretty good. How much does it cost? In other words, I'm convinced. I want it. If you try to close before that trigger factor has taken place in their mind, they won't buy. So sometimes in order to, we say in order to get a real jump off the diving board, you have to go back all the way to the end, back of the diving board and start over again. And make sure that this customer wants it and needs it, can use it, can afford it, has the authority to buy it, and desires to purchase it. Next question.
Our next question comes from Sherry. Sherry, please state your question.
Hi, Sherry. Hello, Sherry.
Hello, sorry. I am from Total Merchant Concepts in Vancouver, Washington, not Canada. And my question is, we feel like we are almost in a commodity-type market where price is often a main concern, and many business owners do not realize the value of the service related to our industry until they actually need it and they don't have it. So many times when we're speaking to prospects, price is their main concern, and we are not the least expensive solution. However, we're definitely the best combination of price and service. So are there some additional ideas related to the price objection in a tightly priced commodity-like industry that you might offer?
Yes. Well, our last full teleseminar was on selling higher-priced products against lower-priced competitors. But let me just summarize it by saying that price is very seldom the reason for buying anything. The only reason price becomes an issue is because you have not given any other reason. So your job is to find out what would cause the person to buy aside from price. And you must be crystal clear. I sometimes say this. Imagine that I was to say to you, Sherry, here is a $10 bill. You hold this let me say it this way. Here's a $10 bill, or here's a $5 bill. I will give you a $10 bill, and you give me a $5 bill. Okay, so this is the deal. Okay, you've got $10 bill, you got a $5 bill in your hand, Mr. Customer, and I'm giving you a $10 bill. Okay, here it is. Here's the $10 bill in exchange for the $5 bill. That is what your offering should be. The person should feel that they're getting much more value for the price than they're paying. And so your job is to say, what are the non-price differentiators in your offering? What is it that you offer that is not that is different from price that justifies the higher price? Because if price were the critical reason for buying anything, nothing expensive would sell. And yet today, every single specialty goods manufacturer, Gucci, Pucci, Cartier, Rolls-Royce, Jaguar dealers are sold out because they charge some of the highest prices in the world. So the question is, what is it that Total Marketing Concepts offers that makes them superior to their competitors and makes it make good sense for the customer to pay the little bit extra because they get vastly more benefit or value from buying from you? And that's what you focus on. Because if in the absence of a focus on value, the customer will always fall back on price and treat you like a commodity, treat you like you and all your competitors are all the same and price is the only differentiator. You have to give them a different differentiator. Next question.
Okay, our next question is coming from Craig. Craig, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking the call.
Hi, Craig.
Hi. A question that I had is there any other pointers you could give us on I want to think it over close?
Well, when a person says, I want to think it over, I feel that there's two possibilities. One is that they don't really want it and they're letting you down gently. Mm-hmm. And the other possibility, and I think it's about 50% of the case, if they've come this far with you in the sales process, about 50% of the case, they're just gun-shy. They're afraid of making a decision, so they want to buy time. And the very best way to deal with this is to first of all, don't argue, but you've got to find out what is holding them back. And the words that I just gave you are the very best that I've found because they're professional, they're low-key, and they uncover the real objection. That's a good idea. I want to think it over. You can pause. You can even start to fold up your briefcase. Mr. Prospect, that's a good idea. This is an important decision. In other words, you make a virtue of necessity. You say, okay, this is an important decision. And then you stop and you say, you know, obviously you have a good reason for wanting to think it over. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Is it the price? And you give them a choice. So they can say, yes, it's the price, or no, it's not. Because they're going to say one or the other. If they say, yes, it's the price, they can't say, no, it's neither one of those, I just don't want it. Okay, that's fine. That's a good piece of information to have. But often they'll say, well, yes, it's the price, or no, it's not the price, it's something else. Whatever it is, you can deal with it, but if you don't know what it is, you can't do anything. So that's your job, is to uncover the hidden objection. Sometimes there's a close called the remaining objections close. This person will say, well, it's this. You say, in addition to that, is there anything else that would cause you to hesitate? If the prospect then says, no, that's the only issue, then you can say, well, if we could satisfy you on that, would you be prepared to go ahead? And now you have an opportunity to make the sale. So give that a try. Give that a try. And you can even read it off. I say to people, just write it down and read it off. That's a good idea. This is an important decision. Obviously, you have a good reason for wanting to think it over. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Is it the price? And you're back in the game. Next question.
Our next question comes from Chandler. Chandler, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Chandler.
I'm a store manager of a retail mattress store.
Yes.
And we're not as well known as our competitors, and we've had a huge struggle finding workers. We've had a really tough time getting a staff, and now I've got a small size staff, but we finally got people in my store.
Yes.
Since we finally have people, my boss doesn't really want to like turn them over, but I'm having a tough time getting these people to read selling materials and your books and the DVDs. I mean, I've got a huge collection of selling materials, but we can't
right.
actually require them to read or watch any of that stuff. So I've got bodies in my store that want to do the minimum, but they don't want to go above and beyond. And since I make a bonus off of everything that gets sold, it's in my best interest to get these guys closing. Do you have any tricks or tips to help me get these guys to?
Well, there's two or three things I can say. Remember, 80% our salespeople are just going through the motions.
Right.
Selling is what is called a default profession. We default into it when nothing else works.
Right.
And we say, well, I'll give this a try. And most people are just giving it a try and doing the minimum not to get fired. So that's what you're dealing with. And that is the same with every single company in the world. Companies like IBM will actually go to the universities and hire and recruit salespeople only with 4.0 averages. They'll go after the creme de la creme and start them at $80,000 or $90,000 a year after a year of training. Small companies like yourself don't do any training. They just hire people who don't know anything about selling and put them out on the floor. So probably the best thing that you could do is have a sales training meeting every morning, maybe 15 minutes, and just give them a technique. Now, there's nothing that succeeds like success. So if you teach them a technique for greeting people, for demonstrating something, for answering an objection, for making a sale, if you teach them something and they try it out and it works, they will be internally motivated to do it again. The other thing is your incentive system. I don't know how you pay these people. If you pay them on commission, then they're much more likely to want to become better. If you pay them on salary, then they're less likely. Or if you pay them on a mix of commission, salary plus commission, well, then you have a lever. And you say, look, I want to help you guys make as much money as possible, and the way that you do it is by selling more of our mattresses, and let me show you some things that you can do to actually make more money. If you can show them that by following your ideas, they will make more money, then you can have a lever over them. But they've got to have a reason. And the last thing I will tell you, and anybody who is a sales manager who's listening to this, is you should spend 20% of your time, the average of a day a week, recruiting new salespeople. Is the fact of the matter is the bottom half of your sales forces are making very few sales anyway. So you should be constantly looking to replace them by looking for new people. And one of the very best places to find new people is go to your local community college. Within 5 miles of where you live, Chandler, there's probably four or five community colleges. Go to the career counselor and tell them you're looking for a motivated person to join your sales force. Always recruit one at a time. Give them a job description of what the job involves, how much it pays, what kind of person you're looking for, and their sole job at the community colleges is to help working adults find jobs that offer them greater opportunity than they already have. So you can get the career counselors at the local community colleges with your request on file, and if you go and meet them personally and even invite them to come and look at your store, then these people will send you a steady stream of highly motivated individuals taking courses because they want to improve their lives. And so your job sometimes is not to try to make the hopeless people better, but to replace them with better people. Next question.
Our next question comes from Beatrice. Beatrice, please state your question.
Hello, Beatrice.
Hi, Brian. I work for a large bank. I am a personal banker.
Yes.
And I bring customers to the loan officer, the person that does the mortgages.
Yes.
But I've seen he's not really sales-oriented, and he goes through the presentation, and many of my customers, I have lost customers that at the end they want to shop around to see if they get a lower interest rate, or perhaps they want to wait until interest rates drop. What do you suggest that I do to encourage them to start the process right away?
Well, again, loans are seen as commodities, Beatrice, as you know. And they're sold on the basis of the percentage points and the points for making the loan, and of course, the interest rate on the loan. And they're going to shop around. What you can do is make a virtue of necessity, as I said earlier, saying, I know you're going to shop around, which they are going to do. And when you do, remember that there are several factors that go into a loan. And these are some of the factors they don't tell you about. So you become their source of education. For example, it's not just the points, but it's the cost if you want to pay off the mortgage earlier, if you want to refinance. There's this point that's here. There's these hidden costs for processing and so on and so forth. Tell them, send them away educated on why a loan from your bank is a better choice than a loan from anywhere else, so that when they go out, they can't be swayed by someone else because they don't have enough information about you. So if you're going to be their personal banker, be their personal coach as well. Know that they're going to check around. Just make sure that when they check around that they are they have the intellectual ammunition to ask the right questions and to come back to you. Questions?
Okay, our next question comes from Jan. Jan, please state your question.
Jan?
Yes, Jan's not there. We'll go on to the next question. Our next question comes from John. John, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. I've been a student of yours for many years. I have most of your books and tapes.
Thank you, John.
I'm in the insurance and employee benefits field. Oftentimes, I'm calling on companies on group health insurance, and I guess the question is, somebody will either be aware of a need or through skillful questioning, you can create or uncover a need.
Right.
Do you believe in just looking for the obvious or by questioning and trying to disturb them to, you know, listen to you?
Well, one of the things which I have found very helpful, which I mentioned as a closing technique, is give reasons why other people have chosen your company rather than someone else's, and ask if these reasons apply to their business. You know, ease of processing claims, simplified payment of premiums, rapid telephone service. In other words, talk about some of the reasons that are non-price reasons that people have chosen you and continue to choose you. I was working with an insurance company recently that has a 94% retention rate, and very competitive field, but 94% retention rate. And what they do is when they meet with a new client is they take some time to explain to them why their retention rate is so high. And customers, and in doing that, you indirectly show the benefit of dealing with you rather than with someone else. So you ask the normal questions, but talk about why you have such a high retention rate, which I'm sure you do. Talk about why will your customers reinsure with you year after year, and say, do any of these reasons apply to your situation? And if you can touch on a hot button, if you touch a nerve, if you touch a source of aggravation or dissatisfaction that they have, they'll tell you. And you say, you know, if we could handle that for you, if we could take care of that for you, if we could remove that problem completely, would you? Would you be interested in looking at working with us? Very gentle, very low-key. But you've got to find, remember, you've got to touch a nerve. And the way you touch a nerve is by talking about all the reasons why people continue to work with you rather than with someone else. It's a very good, it's a way of indirect selling. It's selling without selling. And one final thing, and for John and for everybody who's listening, is one of the most powerful ways to close is to tell success stories of happy customers. People who buy from you and how happy they were they bought from you. There's nothing that creates a visual or emotional mind picture faster than you telling a story about a happy customer, because customers will then see themselves as happy customers if they buy from you. And that anticipation of feeling happy as a result of buying from you is a major closing force, major closing influence. Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Avito. Avito, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. I'm a team manager with a large financial services company as well. I manage about 15 or so sales associates. And one of the common objections that we get is your interest rates are too low. I'd be interested to know how you would suggest overcoming that.
The only way that you can get people off of price when they perceive that you're offering a commodity product, like you buy the price, you buy solely on the basis of price. If the customer says that, then you have not made it clear to the customer that there are elements other than price that enter into this kind of a decision. You see, ultimately, customers are going to do whatever they feel will leave them better off at the end of the day. There's only one thing that customers buy, no matter what your product or service or industry. Customers only buy improvement. They buy because they believe that their life or work situation will be better after buying than it was before. Once they've decided to buy, then they want to get the very most improvement at the very lowest price. And that's what shopping is all about, is finding where can I get the very most improvement in this area, which I want, at the very lowest price, all things considered. Your job is to show them that they are better off, all things considered, by accepting a slightly lower rate of interest because they get all these other benefits. And that is the only way that you can position yourself against your competition is by making it very clear the value that you offer is greater than a small difference in interest rates. Question?
Our next question comes from John Clemens. John, please state your question.
Brian, John Clemens again.
Hi, John.
George Bulletin Advertising. I have a person who is fairly new in telemarketing in that one of your things said if whatever you can do that somebody, you can pay somebody to do something cheaper than it would take you. And I was wondering in terms of if you have an opening catchphrase without her going through too many, while she's being paid a certain percentage for setting up appointments.
Right.
And this is advertising space in church bulletins that gives credibility, let's say, that other media doesn't. They can change the ad copy from week to week, and it's an implied endorsement from the church. If you have a simple interest-creating opening statement that I could maybe give her, I know that getting into a script is private consultant and quite another thing, but if there's just a brief thumbnail thing that I could ask her to suggest to her to tell him to hook him to get an appointment for me.
Well, my first question, which I know the answer to, is my first question is, what is it that you sell? And the answer is that if you are selling to business people, you're selling increased sales.
Okay.
Now, the sole purpose of advertising is to buy customers. Every single business that is in that solicits for clients through any kind of advertising or marketing, direct mail, or anything else, is in the business of buying customers. And so what business people want to do is they want to buy customers at the lowest possible cost per customer. So therefore, the opening statement has to address what the product or service does for the customer. And she could ask something like this, would you be interested in a way of getting more customers at a lower cost than anything you're doing today? Simple as that, because that is a subject that is on the top of the mind of every single business person. Would you be interested in getting more customers at a lower cost per customer than you're paying today with your current advertising? Because if yours doesn't offer that, well, then you're out of business. I mean, you can't say we charge more for less. You have to say that the benefit of advertising with us is actually superior to that of advertising with someone else. So that would be your opening line, and that would get their attention and say, we just need a few minutes just to look at what you're doing and make some recommendations for you, and I'd like to set up an appointment with John Clemens, who can show you exactly how we achieve this goal for you. Does that make sense? Next question.
Our next question comes from Derek. Derek, please state your question.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Derek. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Brian.
Yes.
Yeah, here's the question. Yeah, we're a manufacturer of custom products and services.
What kind?
Of automation stuff. And so typically we close a project with a certain strategy, and then we run with certain contractors. But sometimes those contractors don't get the project, and then there's other successful contractors that get it.
Right.
And we need to go after them at that point to actually get the order. But we didn't run with them on the initial project.
Uh-huh.
So we need an opening line somehow to approach them and say, hey, do you want to work with us, type of thing.
Now you're going to retain the contractors, or they're going to retain you?
That's correct.
They're going to retain you?
Yeah, they're going to retain us.
And they've got the contract with the manufacturer.
Exactly. Well, we are a manufacturer. They're quoting a project. Let's say it's a high-rise building.
Right.
And three contractors are bidding. We're working with maybe two. The other guy, he doesn't come to us for a price because he's working with someone else.
Uh-huh.
But after the fact, contractors often are looking for, you know, options to purchase.
Right.
And so we want to be able to go to these guys and offer them a saleable solution and still try and squeeze an order out of them, even though they never carried us right up front.
Huh. Well, then that's exactly what you have to do. You have to go to them and give them an option and say, this is what I would, what I used to position myself when they say, well, we've already got a supplier, we've got a contractor, we're happy, and so on. You say, well, what we would like to be is we would like to be your first, second choice. So that if for any reason something happens, you're not happy, it doesn't work out or anything else, we would like to be right there for you and be your first, second choice. And on that basis, let me show you what we can do so that you have a really good idea about us in case you need our services. It's a very gentle way of selling, is position yourself as the backup. Nobody should be dependent. We say nobody should be dependent on a single supplier, and neither should you. Let us show you why we're a great second choice for you. And then you can sell just like you were selling as first choice, but now they have you right in their eyes, not only for this job, but for subsequent jobs.
Yeah, good. Great, thanks.
Give it a shot. All right, let's take two more questions, and then we'll be on our way so we can send this out to you. Next question.
Okay, our next question is coming from Becky. Becky, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Becky.
Thanks for this extra time and advice. You make it seem really easy.
It's not easy, but the wonderful thing is all the answers have already been discovered. And so what we do is we just share some of the answers that have worked for other people.
Well, I'm glad you're doing that.
Well, thank you.
I do have a question. It is, how would you apply these same closing techniques to sales copy? Would you recommend any specific techniques?
For sales copy?
Yes.
Well, I am a copywriter by avocation. I used to be a copywriter for one of the biggest advertising agencies in the country, so I know a little bit about the subject. And in writing copy, we say that copy is salesmanship in print. And so in salesmanship in print, what you do in your opening copy is you address the major problem, need, or goal of your ideal customer. So what we do is when we write copy, we say, who is my perfect customer? Who is the customer who can most buy from me the fastest and who is least price sensitive? You know, if you sell fire extinguishers, your ideal customer is someone whose hair is on fire right now. You know, this is a real good customer. They can buy and pay, and they need it and want it and can use it and can afford it and everything else. So it's a fun answer. But you say, who would be my perfect customer? You always start with that. The second question is, what is the most important benefit that my customer would want to enjoy from my product or service? And that becomes the focal point of your advertising, focal point of your copy. And then the rest of the copy focuses on explaining what your product does, not what it is, what it will do for them. We say benefit, benefit, benefit. By using this product, you will enjoy this, you will get this, you will have that, you will be enhanced with this. And then you quote from happy people. You give numbers of happy customers. You give quotations from Consumer Digest that explains how popular or how high quality the product is. But everything in the copy is to prove that if the customer buys your product or service, they will get the promise in the headline. What's in the headline is a promise. Solve a problem, achieve a goal, or take away a need. And the copy is to reinforce and promise, not by what the product is, but by what it does to fulfill that promise. So those are my ideas with regard to sales copy. And I've got a whole library full of books to add to that, too. Next question.
Our next question comes from Beatrice. Beatrice, please state your question.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Beatrice.
Beatrice, again, from the large bank. As a personal banker, I need to ask people that come into the bank that don't have an account with us to open an account with us. Maybe they come through cash or check.
Right.
Maybe they just have a credit card. And what do you recommend I say to encourage them to open an account with us? They already, most of them already have one somewhere else.
Yes. Well, one of the things that you and I have found, it's very hard to get people to switch banks. It's almost like switching, you know, husbands or wives. People often open bank accounts in their teens with the bank and stay with them for life. However, what people like is choices or alternatives. So what you always do is, just what I said a minute ago, you position yourself as a first, second choice. The critical thing in banking or almost anything else is credibility. You already have credibility because they already have something with you, all right? So they will take your call, they will listen to you, and you say it's always a good idea for financially savvy people to have more than one bank working for them or to be working with more than one bank. What we'd like to do is I'd like to invite you in and show you some of the advantages of having another bank in your other pocket. Because sometimes banking relationships don't work out, but you should always have a choice. You should never be stuck with a single choice in banking. Not today with the way things are moving so fast. Could I set up a brief 20-minute meeting where you could come in and we could show you some of the advantages that we can offer of being a backup or a second choice for you in your banking relations? And so by taking the low road, offering to be a backup, offering to be a support, very often you can make the case that will cause them to think that maybe they should do all their banking with you. But if you approach them, Beatrice, to become their primary banker, they will have no interest at all. Again, it's you're asking them to take too big a jump. So you ask them to take little steps. Let us be your first, second choice. Let us be your alternative banker. Let us show you what services we can offer that maybe someone else doesn't have. Let's make sure that you're getting the best deal. Another very good way of getting people to listen to you is say, you can never tell if you're getting the very best deal, the very best terms, the very best services, unless you have an alternative bank that offers you similar services and you can compare. So all we're asking you to do is give us a try and compare our services with those. It's a very low-keyed, very easy way of indirect selling to get people to come in and talk to you for the first time. All right, let's have one more question, and then let's wrap it up. We've gone over about half an hour, but I wanted to answer as many questions as possible. Then I want to get this CD cleaned up and out to you as fast as we can, and also get the notes. So when you get the notes, take some time to go through them because they're actually in greater detail than our discussion, and they're really, really good. I mean, it's almost a book that I'm going to be sending you, so be sure you listen. So let's have one last question, and let's get back to work.
We have no further questions, sir.
No further questions? Great. Well, thank you very much. For those of you who are still here, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to seeing you next time. Get out there and sell like hell. Bye-bye.